Welcome to the Warren Auto Tour. I'm Brian Harris.
And I'm Eric Whiteman. Together, we'll be your hosts for the tour.
While you're still here in the parking lot of the McCall Ranger District, listen to the introduction of the tour. The Auto Tour takes you 44 miles to the town of Warren through some of Idaho's most scenic and historically significant mountain country on the Payette National Forest.
This tour will point out the highlights of this area's history, geology, and scenery, including the influences of Native Americans, miners, settlers, Chinese immigrants, wildlife, and gold.
For detailed information, talk to the local citizens of Warren, check out our local bookstores, and visit the Warren Guard Station, or here in McCall, visit the Central Idaho Historical Museum. Upon your arrival in Warren, the audio portion of the tour will end. Warren is a small place, and its atmosphere and many attractions are much better appreciated at walking speed.
About half of the roads you will be traveling today are paved, while the rest are dirt or gravel and can be rutted, narrow and winding in some places. It is important that you fasten your seat belts, observe the speed limits, and stay on your side of the road.
Also, before leaving McCall, be sure you have plenty of gas in your car. There are no services in the town of Warren or along the way. Places where food and drink are available are only open seasonally.
Take your time. The tour is designed for your leisure. Stop when you wish. Have a picnic. Take a walk and enjoy the surroundings. You can resume the recorded tour at your leisure and not miss a thing. If you can set your odometer to zero, do so now before leaving the McCall Ranger District office.
The points of interest discussed throughout this tour are designated by signposts with mileage markers. Odometer readings may vary per vehicle, so make sure that you make adjustments as you proceed through the tour.
At each recommended stop, an explanation of the site will be given on the CD. At the end of the explanation, a brief description of the next stop will be given, and old-time music will be heard, indicating that the tour CD should be stopped once the music ends at the end of the track. Turn the tour on at the next track on the CD when the next destination is reached. The music sounds like this, and is actually music that was played in the Warren area in the 1870s and 1880s.
Before leaving the McCall Ranger District, it's interesting to note that in 1936, this structure was built by the Civilian Conservation Corps. Company 1997, Camp S-22, was located directly across the street at Lakeshore.
This group also built eight of the other buildings located on this compound, as well as eight of the buildings located on the west end of the block at the Central Idaho Historical Museum. 12 structures are listed on the National Register of Historic Places, the largest concentration of listed CCC buildings in the state of Idaho.
McCall was named for one of his early settlers, Thomas McCall. McCall arrived at the lake in 1891 and traded a wagon and a team of horses to Sam Devers for squatter's rights to the 160 acres of what now is downtown McCall.
McCall, with the help of his wife and sons, operated one of the first sawmills in the area, became the postmaster, and built the area's first flour mill.
In 1908, he donated land and constructed a building for the headquarters of the Idaho, now Payette National Forest. This building, the Lake Street Station, is still standing in downtown McCall.
Now start your car, set your odometer to zero, and let's get rolling. After making the left turn onto Highway 55, start the tour again with Track 2, and we will share the history of McCall.
Today, the town of McCall has about 3,000 year-round residents. In the summer, tourism swells that number to as many as 16,000. Although logging, ranching, and mining were early economic mainstays in the area, today recreation provides most of the town's income.
There are several other historical buildings in the McCall area, including Lake Street Station, the McCall Hotel, and historic Rosebery. Within the vicinity of McCall, there are many interesting and historical sites to be seen, including Ponderosa State Park, which offers a variety of hiking and biking trails, a swimming area, a boat launch, and a camping units. If you're interested in viewing these sites, more information is available at the McCall Chamber of Commerce office.
At 0.6 of a mile, you will cross a bridge and enter what, in 1893, was the town of Lardo. Lardo predates McCall, and the two towns were physically separated from each other because of the yearly spring runoff from the lake that kept washing away the wooden bridge that crossed the Payette River.
W.B. Boydston had the first store here in the 1890s, and it was a well-known stop on the way to Warren, and later Big Creek and Thunder Mountain. As McCall grew and bridge technology improved, Lardo finally merged with McCall. The name Lardo cannot be reliably traced.
At 0.7 miles, the Warren Wagon Road will be on your right. Watch for the highway sign and be sure to make the right-hand turn onto Warren Wagon Road. This will lead you into the Payette National Forest and Idaho's golden history.
The Warren Wagon Road was originally one of several pack trails upon which goods sent to and from Warren were transported on the backs of horses, mules, and men. As the demand for heavier mining equipment grew, so did the need for a road. The road was built in sections from both the north and south. The state road ran from the McCall area up to the Bergdorf Hot Springs.
In 1891, a road constructed by private enterprise led south from Warren to meet the state road at Bergdorf. The road followed the water courses wherever possible, since these were the most accessible passages through the mountains.
However, this required several crossings of the Payette River, which in the spring runoff caused the loss of many belongings. There are several stage stops along the way that have been removed or have fallen into decay.
The first stop is at mile 4.8 on your odometer, a turnout alongside Payette Lake. Watch for signpost number 4.8. At the end of the music, turn off the tour until you reach this stop, where you begin again with track number 3.
Welcome to the first stop on our tour. You are now looking at beautiful Payette Lake, carved by an alpine glacier about 20,000 years ago. Glaciers from the same ice age also created many of the mountain lakes and meadows you will see today.
The city of McCall is located on a terminal or in morand of the glacier. The morand consists of rock, sand, and debris carried by the glacier. This morand formed a dam, causing water to back up and create Payette Lake.
Eventually, the river cut an outlet channel at the lake's southwestern edge. Careful observation of some of the larger rocks along the road will reveal striations or scratches left by the glacier as it scraped along the sides of the mountains.
The lake has been measured to be over 300 feet deep at its deepest point, although some people claim it as much as 600 feet deep, and provides a home for a mythical Loch Ness-type monster named Charlie.
If you should get a glimpse of Charlie, please let the Forest Service know, as documentation is always better than hearsay.
In the early 1900s, Jew's Horse Jack transported people and supply around the lake on his steamboat named Lyda. In the summer months, he often towed a large barge, which local dances were held.
Many people still boat around the lake, but now mostly for recreational purposes. The scenic lake offers excellent opportunities for sailboating, paddleboarding, canoeing, water skiing, and fishing.
The mountains surrounding the lake are primarily made of granite with very minor basalt formations. The small basaltic island to your left is called Cougar Island. On the opposite side of the lake, you can see a portion of Ponderosa State Park.
At the top of the rocky slope directly across the lake from this stop is the Ponderosa Park Scenic Overlook, with fine views of the lake and surrounding mountains.
Now let's continue your drive. At 8.3 miles on your odometer, you will soon reach Warren Wagon Road East Side Road Junction. To the right, East Side Road offers access to North Beach and an optional return route around the lake to Lick Creek Road in McCall.
The tour stays on Warren Wagon Road straight ahead. The next stop will be at 9.3 miles on your odometer at a turnout alongside the Payette River. Watch for signpost number 9.3. At the end of the music, turn off the tour until you reach the next stop, where you will begin again with track 4. Welcome to the Payette River. This river, as well as the Payette National Forest, were named after Francois Payette, a trapper and fur trader who entered this region in 1818 while working for John Jacob Astor's Pacific Fur Company.
Much of this area, as well as locations in and around the city of McCall, were used as a setting for the 1936 through 1938 filming of the Hollywood film Northwest Passage, starring Spencer Tracy, Robert Young, and Walter Brennan.
In the next few miles, there are many waterfalls on the left side of the road, particularly in the spring. In the fall, you may see kokanee salmon in the river.
If you see salmon in the river, they are most likely there to spawn and should not be disturbed. Spawning fish have a noticeably red color along their sides and are quite vulnerable.
As you continue on the tour, you will see the outlet of Upper Payette Lake. On your left is the entrance to Upper Payette Lake Campground.
The next stop will be at 17.9 miles on your odometer, 20 Mile Lakes Trailhead. Watch for signpost number 17.9. At the end of the music, turn off the tour until you reach the stop. There you will begin again with track number 5. Welcome to the 20 Mile Lakes Trailhead. This trailhead offers a restroom with fully accessible facilities, a ramp for unloading pack horses, and access to several of Idaho's mountain lakes.
The Payette National Forest is abundant with trailheads, with trails that lead to beautiful country and some of the best high mountain lake fishing in the United States, as well as providing access to the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness. When combined with the adjacent Gospel Hump and Selway Bitterroot Wilderness, make up the largest contiguous wilderness in the lower 48 states.
As stated earlier, Payette Lake and all the landforms around this present location were formed by glacial activity over 20,000 years ago. However, the granite that makes up the surrounding mountains was itself formed between 95 and 75 million years ago. At that time, numerous large bodies of magma rose into the much older overlying metamorphic rocks and formed the Idaho batholith.
This enormous body of granite underlies most of the central portion of the forest between the Payette River and the South Fork of the Salmon River. As the batholith cooled, superheated water containing dissolved metals migrated upward and tended to accumulate in fractured zones near the top of the batholith.
Here, cooling and chemical reaction caused the precipitation of various minerals, including gold, resulting in the formation of ore veins within the fractured rock. Later, uplift and erosion of the overlying rock exposed some of these veins at the Earth's surface.
The Warren Mining District is one area where approximately 40 such veins have been identified. Further erosion of the veins freed particles of gold, which were then washed into streams and transported until they eventually settled out in areas of slower, quieter water.
These concentrations of gold were known as placer deposits. Recovery of placer gold is generally much easier than underground mining of the veins, and these placers were the first to be developed. The largest placer deposit in the area was in Warren Meadows, about 2 miles northwest of the town of Warren. Several underground operations began mining gold directly from the veins as early as 1867.
Undoubtedly, you have noticed the large burned over areas along both sides of the road. The wildfires that created these burns were started by lightning in August 1994, and were fueled by hot, dry weather, spruce beetle epidemics, and prolonged drought.
When the fire started, they moved through the low, dry branches to the crowns of the dead spruce trees, and then into the adjacent live trees. Over 300,000 acres were burned that year. More information about these fires can be found on the interpretive sign titled New Wildlife Habitat, located on the left side of the road at mile 19.9.
Now, on to Sesesh Summit at mile 22.9 on your odometer. Watch for the mileage in the signpost. A sign stating the altitude marks the summit. At the end of the music, turn off the tour until you reach the next stop, where you'll begin again with track 6. Your ears may be popping now that you have reached the summit at an elevation of 6,434 feet above sea level. The town of McCall is at 5,038 feet in elevation, so we are ascending Idaho's mountains at a rate of about 63 feet per mile. During the winter, snow depths here may reach more than 14 feet.
You might want to keep your eyes peeled for the second largest animal on the North American continent, the moose. Moose are solitary animals that prefer the cooler temperatures that the terrain at this elevation offer. You may or may not see a moose during your tour because they are remarkably adept at staying out of sight. If you do see a moose, observe it from a distance as their behavior is unpredictable.
From here and on into Warren, it is quite common to see deer, elk, the occasional bear, and many other kinds of wildlife. Cross Warren Wagon Road on the left side is another interpretive sign, Nature's Unseen Story, with more information on wildlife and fire ecology.
Now let's continue to the drive. Because you have reached the summit, we are now entering into a new watershed. Until now, all the streams and rivers flowed into the Payette River drainage. This summit forms a natural divide, and from here to the upcoming Steamboat Summit, these waters form the Seasash River drainage.
We will soon cross Summit Creek and Lake Creek, which, along with several smaller creeks, form the Seasash River, which is a tributary of the South Fork of the Salmon River. The original name, Seasash, is quite unique. During the American Civil War, prospectors discovered gold in and around Warren, and tales of this rich discovery spread across the nation.
People from both the northern and southern war zones came to Idaho to seek their fortunes. Yankees from the northern states and secessionists from the southern states found themselves living side by side in Idaho's gold camps.
Seasash is a word derived from secessionist. You will find that many features in the Northwest acquired their names from the smoldering alliances of the Civil War, hence the Idaho towns of Washington and Richmond that will be discussed later in this tour.
You will soon be leaving Valley County and entering into Idaho County. Idaho County received its official designation about the same time gold was discovered in Warren in 1862, and a year before the recognition of Idaho as a territory. During this time, Idaho County included all of the states south of the Salmon River Divide and parts of present-day Wyoming.
The original county seat was in Florence, north of the Salmon River, but in 1869, Washington, in the Warren Mining District, became the county seat. In 1863, there were only about 1,600 people in all of Idaho County.
To date, Idaho County is still one of the largest counties in the state. Idaho County stretches all the way across the state from the Snake River to the Bitterroot Mountains and is approximately the size of the state of New Jersey.
The next stop will be a turnout just beyond the Lake Creek Bridge at the Warren-Bergdorf Junction at 28.9 miles on your odometer. Watch for signpost number 28.9. At the end of the music, turn off the tour until you reach the next stop, where you will begin again with track 7. You've just crossed Lake Creek Bridge. Lake Creek is part of the headwaters of the Seasash River and is another spawning ground for Idaho's migratory salmon population. Over 30% of the Chinook salmon populations that come up the Seasash River return to this area to spawn every year.
Fishing on Lake Creek and the Seasash River is restricted at certain times of year in order to protect spawning salmon. Please check the state fishing regulations before angling in these waters. The old town site of Bergdorf is about 2 miles off Warnwagon Road and is well worth seeing. The town is historically interesting and still offers its original attraction, natural hot springs.
Bergdorf was originally known as Warm Springs and was located on one of the trails leading to Warren. It was a favorite stopping place for foot travelers and saddle sore horsemen who found the mineral-rich hot springs relaxing and medicinal.
Fred Bergdorf, a German immigrant, developed the site, which he settled in 1870. The two-story log hotel was one of the first sites in Idaho to be placed on the National Register of Historic Places. Use of the pool and cabin rentals is available at this privately owned establishment.
At this point, you may choose to turn left and visit Bergdorf or continue on to Warren. If you go to Bergdorf, don't forget to compensate for the added mileage on your odometer. Now, on to Warren.
It's important to note that we are leaving the paved road. Although the road is maintained, the remaining 15 miles between this junction and Warren can at times be narrow, winding, and very rough.
The road usually provides good travel for all but very low sports cars. There is other traffic using this road, so please watch your speed and stay on the right-hand side.
Just prior to entering Seasash Meadows at 31.5 miles, you may notice the Grouse Creek turnoff on your left, just before you cross the bridge over the Seasash River.
That turnoff leads to the War Eagle Fire Lookout and several mines that were started in the 1800s. Seasash Meadows itself proved difficult to mine. Because the meadows are so flat, the water table is higher than most gold-bearing soils, so any gold deposits were not accessible to the early pioneers.
It was not much later that heavy equipment made the Seasash gold deposits accessible, but this area was never extensively mined. The next stop will be on your left at the Seasash Meadows Rural Fire District building at 32.8 miles on your odometer. Watch for the signpost. At the end of the music, turn off the tour until you reach that stop, where you'll begin again with track number 8.
Above the fire district building, on the hill, is the Seasash Cemetery. The road to the cemetery is located behind the fire district building. It is 1/10 of a mile if you would like to walk up the hill to the cemetery.
The CSAS Cemetery was established in 1904 when two murder victims were buried on the hill. The two miners were killed by Rudolph Wetter in a mining altercation. Wetter was sentenced to hang for the murders, but his sentence was later commuted to life in prison. He was then released from the Idaho State Penitentiary in 1916.
There are 12 historic burials in the cemetery, and as many modern ones. Twin boys of Jack and Ethel Fernan are buried here. You can see the remains of the Fernan homestead on Seasash Meadows at the next stop on the right at 34.3 miles. Watch for the mileage and signpost. At the end of the music, turn off the tour until you reach the next stop, where you will begin again with track 9.
These log structures, the Fernan Ranch, were constructed in Seasash Meadows around 1925 by Jack and Ethel. The building you see on the left was a log barn, and the building on the right was their residence.
For over 20 years, Jack harvested and sold wild hay from 80 acres and used the meadows for pasture land. He was not able to patent this homestead because the land was classified as mineral land.
Seasash Meadows is an excellent spot to see wildlife, especially during the early morning and late evening. Keep an eye out and your camera ready for deer and elk that come to the meadows to feed. You can also see remnants of the 1989, 1994, 2000, and 2007 fires in the mountains around the meadows.
As we cross the second bridge, the road will leave the Seasash River. The river travels from here to its confluence with the South Fork of the Salmon River. A sign indicating the Chinook Campground will appear on your right at mile 35.5, not long after crossing the bridge.
The campground is on the banks of the Seasash River and might prove a pleasant diversion. It is also the trailhead for the popular Loon Lake Trail Loop.
Now we will climb up to Steamboat Summit. The summit is at mile 39.2. If you make any side trips, don't forget to compensate for the added mileage on your odometer.
Watch for the mileage and signpost number 39.2. At the end of the music, turn off the tour until you reach this stop, where you begin again with track number 10. Steamboat Summit has an elevation of 6,996 feet above sea level. This is an optional stop, so you can either listen to the tour while you are stopped or as you continue on with the tour.
We are now nearing Warren, and it is time to begin describing this golden nugget of Idaho's history.
In 1862, prospector James Warren discovered gold on what became known as Warren Creek. News of the discovery spread quickly after Warren returned to Lewiston and reported his find. People from all over the world flocked to the Warren country to stake mining claims, particularly miners from the 1861 boom town of Florence.
About the same time, other strikes were made at locations in the Boise Basin to the south and the Bannock to the east. Since these areas were more accessible, Warren's camp did not attract the thousands who had flocked to Florence the year before.
By the following summer, however, Warren's camp had become Northern Idaho's leading camp with a population of 660 by the end of the season. By 1870, most of the easy placer deposits were played out, and many of the Euro-American miners had moved on to other areas, although several of the hard rock quartz mines still provided good returns.
Some of Warren's camp first miners were either Northern Unionists or Southern Secessionists. As the war raged over 2,500 miles away, loyalty for both sides were clearly defined. These opposing loyalties converged at the Warren discovery, and they formed two camps.
The Unionists established the town of Washington at the current site of Warren, and the Secessionists built their own rival town of Richmond at Slaughter Creek. It was no mistake that the two towns were named after the opposing U.S. capitals of the Civil War.
However, by 1866, Idaho's Richmond fell. Its destruction was not caused by the lack of political allegiance, but because the original founders of this Richmond had inadvertently located the town on what proved to be gold-bearing ground.
Richmond was destroyed and its foundations were mined. Washington survived due to pure chance, as it was not located on gold-rich soil. The town of Washington officially became known as Warren in 1885 when the name of the post office was changed.
Warren was located in a remote wilderness. All the town's supplies had to be brought in by foot or pack train. In the winter, when the trails were covered by 7 or more feet of snow, the residents of Warren were often very near starvation.
However, as the gold deposits kept producing, the town and services also improved. By 1867, Warren could boast several businesses, including general stores, outfitters for the miners, the Idaho Hotel, and several saloons.
In 1869, the town of Washington became the county seat of Idaho County. Despite increasing recognition of this community, its isolated geographical location caused prices for goods and services to be high. In 1863, a newspaper cost $2.50. Hairpins cost 75 cents per dozen. And meals at the boarding house cost $3.
Later, pork cost 25 cents per pound, flour 10 cents per pound, and sugar 32 cents per pound. 2 dozen tomatoes cost $7. Whiskey was $1.25 a bottle, and a package of tobacco cost 25 cents.
As you descend from the summit, you may notice three things on the landscape. First, high on the hillside, the short, steep switchback road. This is the Lucky Bend mine that is privately owned. The road is used to access the mine and is not open to the public.
Next, you may notice the parallel lines running across the hillside as you drive along Steamboat Creek. They became visible after the 2007 East Zone Complex wildfires and are the historic ditches that were built by the early placer miners in the Warren Mining District.
As noted, placer mining required large amounts of water, and the hillsides around Warren are lined with ditches. The third thing you'll notice as you drive along Steamboat Creek are windrows of water-worn cobbles that were left from gold dredging operations that took place in the 1930s.
A dredge is basically a huge machine built to recover gold from stream banks. Typically, dredges of this period were often over 100 feet long and 3 or more stories tall, although some smaller dredges called doodlebugs were also in use.
Once the dredge was constructed in the stream and the watercourse dammed, the machine literally ate its way along the stream bed. This was accomplished by a series of cable-driven buckets that scooped down to the bedrock at the bottom of the streams and carried gold-bearing sand and gravel into the dredge's conveyor belts.
These belts carried the materials onto a series of sorting devices that separated larger rocks from the finer sands. The sands were then run through a series of sluice boxes where the gold was captured.
The waste material was dumped out the back of the dredge by the stacker that laid down the cobbles in linear piles. While the dredge was very destructive to the environment, it was an efficient gold mining tool.
The next stop will be the Chinese Cemetery at 43.6 miles. Watch for the mileage and signpost. At the end of the music, turn off the tour until you reach this stop, where you will begin again with track number 11. A description of Warren's history would not be complete without mentioning the Chinese and Native American influences in the area. Initially, Chinese were excluded from the mining district, but in 1869, after Euro-American miners had taken most of the easily recovered gold out of the placer claims, the miners voted to allow them into the district and began selling or leasing their mining claims to the Chinese.
Between 1870 and 1900, Chinese miners reworked existing claims and placer mined new material-rich ground, especially in Warren Meadows. In 1870, census records for the Washington precinct listed 362 Chinese people, 60% of the total, living in the area.
By 1880, there were 394 people of Chinese descent, making up 80% of the population. By 1900, the Chinese population had dropped to only 22, but the true population figures should probably be higher since it was difficult to locate the widely dispersed population in the mining district.
Traditional Chinese beliefs decreed that if a person died away from their homeland, their remains must be returned there. Often this was not immediately possible. Here, at Warren's Chinese Cemetery, the dead were interred temporarily until their remains could be sent back to their homeland.
If you wish to visit the cemetery, there's a short, slightly hilly trail with interpretive signs directly to your left. In Warren, two of the last Chinese residents were Ah Sam and Ah Khan. Ossam died in 1933 and is buried in the Euro-American Cemetery above the town of Warren. Ah Khan died in 1934, marking the end of the Chinese presence in Warren.
Other evidence of Chinese presence in the area is the China Mountain Terraced Gardens, historically known as China Jake Ranch. These are extensive terraces constructed by the Chinese to grow vegetables for the mining camps of Warren.
The Chinese realized that the lower elevations and south-facing slopes of the South Fork of the Salmon River provided a warm enough climate to grow vegetables, fruit trees, and herbs. After the harvest, the Chinese would pack these crops by mule train over the mountains to Warren and make good money selling the produce to the miners.
Although the gardens are not part of this tour, the terraces are still visible. If you wish to visit the terraces, take the road to Warren Summit. At the summit, follow the road that leads to Hettinger Ranch. When you reach Hayes Station, located on one of the upper garden terraces, you will find an interpretive sign explaining more about those remarkable mountain gardens.
In addition to positively affecting the miners' diets, the Chinese also ran their own stores, saloons, and gambling houses. The whole town anticipated the festive celebrations of the Chinese New Year and celebrated with a parade from Warren to the Chinese cemetery.
At this same location, you'll see the remains of early placer mining, mounds of rounded and weathered stones. These tailings are the result of mining that occurred here during the late 1800s and early 1900s.
The tailings were stacked by hand during the process known as placer mining. Placer mining was done by washing huge amounts of water over the ground to separate the soil, sand, and gravels from larger rocks.
The larger rocks are discarded into huge piles, and the smaller material is run through sluice boxes. The bottom of the sluice box is lined with riffles made of small slats of wood. Gold is a very heavy mineral, and when washed free of its surrounding material, the heavy gold sinks to the lowest available point.
As the gold-bearing soil is washed through the sluice box, the gold sinks to the bottom of the box and becomes caught by the riffles. The rest of the comparatively lighter sands and gravel washes out of the end of the sluice box. At the end of the day's washing, the riffles are pulled up and the gold can be retrieved.
The next and last stop in the auto tour is the town of Warren at mile 44.5. Go to the Warren Guard Station, which is located on the east side of town. At the end of the music, turn off the tour until you reach the guard station, where you will begin again with track 12.
Welcome to Warren. As you can see, Warren is not a ghost town. It has year-round and part-time residents who respect and care for their homes. They are friendly and helpful people, and many of them are intimately familiar with the history of the town and the surrounding area.
However, they do not appreciate souvenir hunters. The 1906 Antiquities Act and the Archaeological Resource Protection Act provide stiff penalties for removing or disturbing any artifacts.
By far the most famous resident of Warren was Polly Bemis. She was sold as a slave by her family in China and came to Warren in 1872. In 1880, she was listed in the census as a housekeeper for Charlie Bemis.
By 1890, Charlie operated a saloon while Polly ran a boarding house. In an argument with a man over money, Charlie was shot in the face. The residents credited Polly with saving his life due to her nursing and herbal treatments of the wound.
Charlie and Polly were married in 1894, and that same year moved to a ranch on the Salmon River, 12 miles north of Warren. The ranch burned during the summer of 1922, and 2 months later, Charlie died.
Polly moved back to Warren for 2 years while her neighbors on the Salmon River rebuilt her cabin. In 1924, she moved back to the ranch while she lived until she became ill in 1933, and she died that same year in Grangeville.
The movie and a novel, A Thousand Pieces of Gold, were based on her life. There is a display of Chinese artifacts for public viewing at the Warren Guard Station.
In many ways, the Native American culture did not fare as well as the Chinese culture in the Warren area. The campaign against the Sheep-Eater Indians in 1879 is a good example of this conflict.
In the late 1800s, settlers had become uneasy because of the 1877 Nez Perce War and the 1878 Bannock War. The paranoia of settlers grew to the point that any deprivation in the county was blamed on the local bands and Native Americans.
The Sheep-Eaters are Northern Shoshone. They lived in central Idaho between the Snake River and the Montana-Idaho border. When five Chinese miners were found murdered at Loon Creek in 1879, the local settlers blamed the Sheep-Eaters and sought protection from the U.S. Cavalry.
The Army organized a punitive expedition using troops from the garrisons at Boise, Mount Idaho near Grangeville, and Umatilla, Washington. After many hardships, the cavalry finally reached Sheepeater Country in mid-July.
The campaign lasted for over 2 months and took place in some of the most inaccessible and rugged terrain in the nation. On October 1, 1879, 51 Shoshone surrendered near Chamberlain Basin. This area is now part of the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness. This was the last major Indian conflict to take place in Idaho.
After the Sheepeater campaign, things calmed down in Warren and mining continued. The first gold dredge was brought into the area in 1895. This dredge was steam-driven and to some degree resembled a Mississippi steamboat.
The townspeople were quite impressed by the hissing and clanking of the machine that quickly proved to be an efficient mining tool.
In September 1904, fire raged through most of the business section of Warren. The blaze started in the back of one of the town's saloons. Since the fire destroyed the grocery stores, there was concern that supplies could not be replenished before the snow closed the roads.
Luckily, that fall season was mild, and by December, the town had been rebuilt and stocked. In the early 1930s, Warren became a boom town once again. New and improved dredges significantly increased the size of Warren's population and economy.
The dredges operated from 1931 until 1942, when all mines not essential to the war effort were closed down. During this period, miners extracted about $4 million in gold.
In comparison, the entire yield of placer gold from the Warren area is estimated to be about $15 million, when gold was valued at $15 to $35 per ounce.
That brings us close to the end of the tour. The music that you've been listening to on this tour was played in Warren in the 1870s and 80s. Peter Beamer, a Warren miner and musician, wrote down over 100 instrumental tunes for the local dance orchestra that played in the community.
A copy of his manuscript is held by Boise State University, and these recordings were made by Voyager Records and are used with their permission.
We would like to end the tour with a quadrille from Beamer's manuscript. Imagine dancing in Charlie Bemis' saloon on long winter nights during the gold rush days in Warren.
This concludes the Warren Auto Tour. The second part of your brochure is a walking tour of the Warren townsite.
We hope you enjoyed the tour and, more importantly, the McCall-Warren area.
Please return your CD to the McCall Ranger District office in McCall. Thank you for your time and enjoy your visit to the Payette National Forest.